when these two big juggernauts came to a clash, to a head. Morsi and the Brotherhood governed in a very majoritarian style. They alienated people across the political spectrum. They encouraged and wanted a brutal security sector. They encouraged the killing of protesters. And so when the parts of the deep states, the police and the army, that they tried to placate, they really did try to bring them on their side and be a part of a new elite and harness the state instead of reform it, when those elements turned on them, there was no one standing by them. And so people have been watching this killing. Of course, they condemn this level of violence, but it's a very complicated and difficult situation right now in Egypt.
Sharif, I want to thank you for being with us, and we look forward to talking to you when you go back to Cairo. Sharif Abdulqudus, Democracy Now! Correspondent, fellow at the Nation Institute. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.
I just want to say a very quick congratulations to Sharif and Priya on their engagement in Egypt.
Well, Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aramate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Samalkov, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Shirina Nadura, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley. Julie Crosby will be broadcasting from Poland all week next week at the UN Climate Summit. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermin Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guests are local activist and folk music artist Justin Bridges. We'll talk about his lawsuit against the city of Portland for police brutality during the Occupy protest of 2 years ago. Also, Simon Tam of The Slants will be here. The Slants is an Asian band fighting the federal government.
Hey, do you believe in buying local? In having regulations to protect our air and our water? How about guaranteeing a minimum wage for workers? Well, your choice in the matter is at risk and may be gone before you know what hit you. Join me, Linda Olsen Osterlund, on a deeper look this Thursday morning, November 14th at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Arthur Stamoulis of the Citizens Trade Campaign. Find out about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TAFTA, and Fast Track. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
Hi, I'm Joanne Hardesty. Join me on November 14th for a stimulating conversation on Voices from the Edge. I will be interviewing John Nichols and Robert McChesney, co-authors of Dollarocracy, a new book on how the money and media election complex is destroying America. Join us from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. on November 14th on Voices from the Edge.
KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present The Yes Men Fix the World. Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m., KBOO will be showing the 2009 indie classic film The Yes Men Fix the World. The Yes Men Fix the World is the true story of two political activists posing as executives of giant corporations. In their thrift store suits, they lie their way into big business conferences and pull off pranks. That's The Yes Men Fix the World, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/yesmen2013.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale. Full Circle accepts like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, and accessories for consignment or store credit. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont, and on the web at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com or fullcircleresaleportland.com.
This KABU program has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It's 8:06 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, music and politics. We're joined by Occupy troubadour Justin Bridges, who just released his new CD today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And also by Simon Tam, founder of The Slants, the band that has been suing the Federal Copyright Office just for the right to copyright their own name. Simon, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, did I say that right? You're on appeal with that. Talk about your case. Let's start with you, Simon. What's going on with The Slants? Now, you were on these airwaves. I want to say it's been 2 years, maybe 3 years, talking about this case. Mm-hmm. What's going on now?
Well, it's actually a trademark. So we're trying to trademark our band name, and we were rejected. So about 2 years ago, we kind of talked about our social justice movement, how we were getting surveys, community organizers. We had a dictionary expert on the case, and we did all this sort of we collected about 3,000 pages of evidence. We sent it to the trademark office, and they still rejected it with a couple of sentences. They pretty much disregarded the opinions of thousands of Asian Americans, and instead said that what we were doing was offensive to ourselves. And so we decided to fight back and say, well, you know, the slant is actually a neutral word. Most people don't use it in a way that references Asians, Americans. So why did you apply that racial slur to our case, but you've never done that with almost 800 other cases in the entire history of this country? Why did you put it on this case, but nobody else? And they said, it is incontestable that you are an Asian American. In other words, if I was white, this would not be an issue at all.
Whoa, no. I got to go back over that again. So, and now you're on appeal. But what they're saying is, if you were white and you called your band The Slants, it would not be offensive. But because you're Asian and you call your band that makes it offensive.
Correct. Because by the very nature of my race, people are going to automatically think of the racial slur as opposed to the actual dictionary definition. And they actually said we went too far and that we are too Asian because we have dragons on our album cover, because we have symbols of our cultural heritage. Therefore, we're just way too Asian for their comfort.
My mind just went blank. It just went...
Yeah.
I'm staggered a little. I'm glad I'm sitting down. So now, I just read a really fascinating interview with you in Time Magazine. In fact, I think it was just a month ago. It was just a couple weeks ago now. And you talk about where the band name came from. And it's completely it's a genius name. Huh. Talk about like your process of deciding that The Slant was the best name for the band. What were you thinking about? Well, and also go into your album, The Yellow Album, which is very celebrated. But go ahead.
Well, I was actually talking to a friend of mine, and I said, you know, what's something that all Asian Americans have in common, or what's some kind of stereotype that you think that we all have? And they said, you have slanted eyes. And I thought, well, you know, that's actually a very interesting term, because slant can mean so many different things. And so I thought, well, rather than it just being about our eyes, why can't we say it's our Asian American slant, our own perspective as people of color in this country who've been you know, generation after generation treated like second-class citizens. Why don't we take that and say, let's talk about our experiences as human beings and how we are treated differently than others. It's also, yeah, I thought it was kind of a clever reference to music because there's slant guitar chords, there's slant guitar cabinets, and I thought, okay, you know, serious guitar geeks, they're going to get this.
The guitarists in the room are nodding. They're nodding.
Yeah, so I thought, you know, maybe someone would catch that, and it'd be a kind of a fun thing. And on top of all, I thought, hey, this sounds kind of like an 80s new wave band, so let's roll with it.
It's like the Jam.
Yeah, and we thought this is a fun thing, and we can use it to create some meaningful discourse about race and ethnicity.
Meaningful discourse about race and ethnicity. So I just have to take another 2 minutes to drill down into when we're talking about they said that you are too Asian. Who are we talking about? Like, who is it in that copyright office that makes this decision? And then you went to court, and who in the court passed down that decision that you're appealing? Who
sure.
are we talking about?
Well, it's one attorney. He's the examining attorney for the trademark office. And then when we tried to appeal that decision to the Trademark Trials and Appeals Board, there was a judge involved in that case, and they agreed with that person. So essentially, it was two people. They're ruling about Asian Americans. They actually didn't decide to speak to any Asian Americans about the matter at all. And they wrote out this pretty lengthy explanation saying how, well, you know, you have a picture of an Asian on your album cover. Well, yeah, I mean, we're Asian. You can't avoid that. You have
so if you were a skinhead band, if you were an Asian skinhead band, maybe they'd be good with that?
Yes, that's correct, because okay. they said our intentions don't matter at all. So
okay.
that's why shortly after they announced their decision, we had a bunch of white supremacist groups brag about how they could trademark slant, and some of them have, and we can't. And so it's incredibly infuriating, and this is why for us this battle is a bit more personal, because we say, you know, as a minority group, we should have the right to determine for ourselves what is appropriate. And just as a bottom line thing, like, no matter how you feel about the word slant, a person shouldn't be denied rights because of their race. That's something that we have all agreed on is a terrible thing to do. And while it's true we can still use our band name even without a trademark registration, you know, the government's not going to come in and shut us down for it or anything like that. Saying that we have to live with it is like telling somebody who's gay, well, you can still have a relationship, you just can't be married. You know, you can't be recognized. You just don't count as much as somebody else. I mean, that's just absurd to me.
It's astounding. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Simon Tam, founder of The Slants. We've had this band on the air before, and we're going to talk a little bit about their music more a little bit later. We're also in the studio with Justin Bridges. Now, you remember, he was he was the sign language interpreter for the Occupy encampment in front of City Hall. And 2 years ago, when the police moved in and beat that encampment down and rolled it away, Justin got, I'm just going to say, you were beaten and you've been in a wheelchair ever since.
Yeah.
There was a lawsuit. I don't even know if you want to get into the lawsuit. The lawsuit was settled, yeah. but it was not satisfying at all.
Right.
So we just heard from Simon Tam about what happened with the Slants in court. Justin Bridges, talk a little bit about what has happened with you as you you were beaten and you went to court. You didn't get what you needed. You're still yeah. in the wheelchair and you're going with the music. But like, so social change, what have you learned? You know, what have you learned and how are you able to use that?
Some of the things that I've learned, like one of the things that I've learned, that if you're suing the police or the city, they're going to lie no matter what. And on top of that, if you don't have absolute proof of every little single thing, and like you can have witnesses and video and you can still lose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, look at Liz, the woman that got maced. She got nothing.
Right. That was the famous photograph that was in the Oregonian of the officer at the Occupy. Those were street demonstrations as opposed to the camp being broken up.
Right.
And the maced in the mouth and the yeah. officer just, yeah.
And she was on the sidewalk, and that judgment came down the weekend before my settlement.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
so that was one of the big factors that helped to...
And so, yeah. Okay, so I want to just walk this back a little bit. One of the things that strikes me the most about the Occupy movement is that today I hear people say, oh, it's gone, it's over. Right? And yet I have on these airwaves a whole parade of people that started specific projects that continue to do those projects, mm-hmm. especially around defending people's homes, helping people not lose their homes to foreclosure. But there's a whole nationwide, there's kind of a lot right. of different Occupy, like the Occupy Hurricane Sandy people.
Exactly. And also there's still, I mean, there's things like the Rolling Jubilee that I announced last year when I came on. They just announced another buyout that they just did. I think they're up to $14.6 million of debt that they've abolished.
The Rolling Jubilee is so interesting because basically here I'm going to their website, rollingjubilee.org. It's a project of the organization called Strike Debt. And the point is that, you know, the bailing out the people. So
exactly.
People come together. They have like an online, I'm going to say platform, and you can throw down a little bit of money in there. The organizers bundle the whole thing together and they buy debt just the same way these mortgage companies do. Now, I heard a great big criticism of that. This one guy went on the internet, it's a series of tubes. This one guy went on the internet and he said, oh, this is terrible. No, you're going to destroy these people because then they can be taxed for the cost of their bubbity bubbity buh. But it hasn't happened. I'm just saying it hasn't happened. And maybe it will, but it hasn't happened. So this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're talking about music and politics, right? Really interested in the limitations of the political system to do basic things. When our artists are doers, and we already have a caller, of course, the number to call 503-231-8187. We have Brian on the phone. Brian, what's going on with you?
I just wanted to tell Simon, you know, I had something to say to Justin, too, but Simon, I just wanted to tell you what you're doing is great. And, you know, it follows the old tradition I learned when I was a lot younger of Lenny Bruce and kind of the George Carlin thing is, like, you know, let's take these words out and let's use them, you know, let's make them funny if we have to. You know, if we will, let's just use them until, you know, the weight of negativity does not, you know, isn't around them anymore. And I think what you're doing is great. And, you know, hey, congratulations. And I think you will eventually win your case. But I think these words are used as political, you know, it's part of the political machine. So as long as these words can be negative. You know, it's a plus for, you know, the dark side. So.
Brian, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
Is there a musician, a band, or an artist of any kind that really inspires you politically?
Inspires me politically?
Politically.
Oh, my God. I mean, what doesn't? But, you know, the late 60s movement, you know, of everybody from, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Jefferson Airplane, you know, I don't know. I think now when I hear new music, it's so ingrained. You know, like social commentary is so ingrained. It's hard not, you know, unless you just listen to Justin Bieber and pop music, it's hard not to hear somebody saying something nowadays.
All right.
And that's my feeling.
Thanks for calling, Brian.
Sure. Thanks for your words.
And I just wanted to tell Justin, you know, dude, right on. And, you know, it's great to see somebody, you know, hanging in there after all you've gone through. And,
Thank you very much.
I'm going to tell you something. I guarantee you, you're going to win.
All right.
And you guys take care.
Brian's passing out positivity. He's got positivity for his bass. He's just throwing them all over the room. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Justin Bridges and Simon Tam. We're talking about art and politics, music and politics. We talked a little bit about, Brian brought this up, about the lyrics that the slants are going through. And, you know, I hear people a lot of times lately say young people are not political enough. Like young people don't have the social consciousness. Talk, if you can, a little bit, Simon, about the slants music and what you're doing with it. And maybe even how this case has maybe has this case politicized your music a little bit more than it would have been?
I would say maybe to some degree. And actually, for the past 5 years, our band, in addition to touring around North America, we actually do workshops on racism and stereotypes. And we've been fighting bullying against against kids in school. So we've done quite a bit of social justice work, and the band's been a great platform for that because we get to go in there in a way where the students can relate to us, as opposed to it being a very administrative like program or something like that.
An attorney that comes from the copyright office and lectures about race. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
It just came out. I don't know.
No, it's been great in that regard that we've been able to use this band to do more than just celebrate art, which is something we're very passionate about. We're also able to talk about causes we're passionate about too. So, for example, when the tsunami struck Japan a few years ago and the Fukushima disaster, we were actually about to go on tour right around that same time. And we had several of us had loved ones in Japan, and we thought, you know, let's combine this tour with awareness and fundraising for the effort. So we teamed up with a bunch of other people and to raise money for the disaster, and coast to coast collected money and raised about $34,000 in 2 weeks. And actually, as a band and as individuals, we've raised a little bit over $1 million for charities that we cared about. Just last fall, we raised enough money to rescue a family of four from North Korea as refugees. And so it's really cool that we have this incredible honor of being able to be a part of making this world a better place. And it all comes through being able to play music and do our art.
It's more than just being able to play music. You're bringing something to it. Justin Bieber's not bringing that. You know what? Maybe he is. And I have not checked in with Justin Bieber. But I think that there is something more than you're bringing it. You know, you're putting that in there. I'm just saying.
We certainly try. And this trademark office has brought a lot of attention to our band. I mean, not always about the music. A lot of times people just know about us because of this case itself. But I think it's a good thing because, you know, a couple years ago before I started this band, we typed in slant into Google or slants, every once in a while you'd come across like a white supremacist group or an AsianJokes.com kind of thing. Now, whenever you type in the slants, all you find is a group of people who are proactively putting on a bold portrayal of Asian American heritage. I think that's a really cool thing. And so it has our discussions about race and stereotypes. It has our music. And it's showing that Asian Americans have a voice in this country as well.
And I just want to say, of all the newcomer groups, of all the ethnic groups, communities in this country, sometimes I feel as though maybe the Asian communities are the least understood in a lot of ways. There's a lot of different communities there, long history of things that we've done. I'm just guessing that attorney in the copyright office literally doesn't know anything about the culture at all.
I would assume that as well. I mean, I don't think he realizes that. I think he's blinded by privilege, that he's so entrenched in this mindset that he's protecting us when he's using race as a reason to deny us rights, to bridge our free speech rights. I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me. And I don't think he understands what it's like to be a person of color or a person who's just doesn't have the same rights as other people in this country.
You know what is interesting about what you just said? What is that attorney's name?
It's Mark Schreiner.
Mark Schreiner. Just want to put it out there. You know what's interesting? So that attorney's saying he's protecting you guys this way. I feel like I have this crazy memory of Justin Bridges being in the middle. He was trying to, okay, now I've seen this video of what happened to Justin several times. Justin was actually, I feel as though you were trying to help someone else. And then the police went in there and grabbed you and dragged you and did all kinds of things. But I feel as though they came out and said they were helping you.
Yeah.
Very specifically, they said they were helping you all the way to the hospital.
While I was in the hospital, they did a press release and they said that they were pulling me to safety like they would one of their own. It was their statement. When someone's on the ground and you're informed that they can't feel their legs, you're not supposed to move them, period. Much less grab them by the ankles, drag them into the park, and then start kicking and hitting and laying into them.
I don't mean to be difficult, but we just got our property taxes, and our property taxes went way up, and I couldn't help looking at the property taxes, and $500 of my property taxes go to the police and fire disability and retirement fund. So if they treated you, if they helped you like they helped one of their own, then I would say that you would get a whole lot of health care. I'm just saying. So did you get a hope? Let's just walk this back a little minute and say that really, I want to say that the Occupy movement is a movement about class. It's about poverty, right? So let's talk a little bit about your medical bills and what that did and how they helped you with your medical bills.
Well, they didn't. I got some of them forgiven. But I mean, it's crippling debt, you know? And I, like I said, I only ended up with $2,300 from the settlement. And, so I can't interpret anymore either. So there goes my career.
It damaged your nerve system.
If I sign for more than 15 minutes, my hand swells up, but it's, cause it's more movement signing than it is picking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right. I can still play. It took me 6.5 months to get my arm back. And so I didn't know if I was going to be able to play again. But got my arm back after 6.5 months, and I've been spinning it out ever since.
Okay, so let's dig into that a minute. We talked a bit about civil rights and Asian communities with Simon Tam and the courts and the attorney that runs that copyright office. But here now we're just gonna shift a little bit and talk about the music and politics of Occupy and what's happening in the political system of the city of Portland, because that's really what that was about in so many ways. And so, you know, what's the status right now? You know, the Hales administration really screwed up its response to people homeless. Let's say the houseless community.
Yes,
the Hales administration has not really stepped up with that, and they sort of stuck Commissioner Amanda Fritz with the Right to Dream 2 issue, where I think maybe it's possible you could say that Commissioner Fish actually had more when he was in charge of the housing stuff. He had more understanding things going on, partnerships going on. But anyway, Occupy happened. It was just crushed. It was stubbed out, although there's still people doing actions, especially around housing. I think also around food, the region. But go ahead.
One thing about the camp that was so special is that it was a microcosm of society. So we brought in – there were things that were happening there that just aren't happening because there isn't that public space to come together like that as a community. There's never been – I mean, well, there has been things like that before. Look at the Hoovervilles. Look at in 68. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had occupations before. They've done this before. And it is a very active form of protest because you are bringing people together that would never be together across all sorts of class lines, race lines. There are people that were there that would never, ever have come into contact with each other. And it was something that was just magical. It's really hard to capture it with just words.
Well, what strikes me about the Occupy movement was, you know, in our normal lives, we do our things. We vote or we do whatever it is we do. We pass petitions. But when Occupy happened, we were all on the street. And we got to see who each other was.
Exactly.
You know, I was amazed at some of the people that I saw out there. And it also how the community responded to it, or the city. It was also how the community and the city responds to the people that are inconvenient also.
Exactly.
So I want to ask you, because we talked to Simon Tam. The band has been on tour, I think, all around the entire North American continent. So you've had a chance to talk with people. Now, you've been on tour, too.
Right.
So Justin Bridges, when you, and in a few minutes, I'd love if you could play a song from your new CD that you're releasing today.
Definitely.
But what have people told you around the country, because Occupy happened everywhere?
Well, it's different in different areas. I've got a lot of support in areas I wouldn't expect support. I've had a lot of people say some really nice things down south, which was really surprising.
You went to the south. Where did you go specifically?
I'm from Texas.
Oh, my God.
And so I traveled in March. I did 20 shows in 30 days. Went from Portland all the way down to Houston and back driving. Went through Utah and Colorado. And came through and everything.
What did people tell you? What's other people's take on the Occupy and what it meant to them in other parts of the country?
It is, a lot of people have thanked me and other occupiers for bringing about the new conversation, like bringing about a new, I mean, the whole political conversation has changed since Occupy. I mean, even if it's just bringing in the 99% versus the 1%, just that ideology right there, introducing that into the mainstream was something that woke a lot of people up, and people are starting to realize how things are. And I mean, that's what it takes. We need to educate people and wake people up.
It's interesting all the ways that played out. And we do have a caller. Let's quickly go to the phone lines. We've got Joanne. Joanne, what do you think?
Well, Lisa, darling, I don't know why I bother anymore, but I guess it has to do with holding on and trying to survive better. But anyway, you know what? I want to ask the people there and any callers or anybody else. You know, well, first of all, I'm glad people do political music and art and theater and that. But I want to ask this question. I don't know if I'll get an honest answer. I don't know if any more, there are any honest answers to heavy political stuff. But does anyone believe that energy that protesting against war in a real way or in any way has been killed in Portland and Oregon? I'll hang up. Bye.
I feel like I think that what Joanne asked was, does anybody think protest has been killed in Portland? And that is a fascinating question. I want to put it out to you guys. What do you think, Simon?
I don't think so. I think that demonstrations like Occupy or just, I mean, any kind of demonstration, it causes people to talk about the issue. And what I see is, especially before the Occupy movement, is that people were afraid to talk about these things. They just made assumptions, just like they make assumptions about race or gender or issues that kind of afflict our society. They just say, well, you know, that's just the system. That's just how things are. And they accept it as is. But here we have people who are willingly putting their lives and health and safety at risk to say something and saying, you know, something about our society and our community is wrong. There's something sick about it, and let's do something to fix it. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about these issues in a different kind of way than what you only hear about on the news or what you only hear about from the government. Let's talk about it from our own experiences and perspectives. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably one of the greatest takeaways from any kind of protest or and demonstration.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the other part that gets me, Joanne, is that people assume that if they read it in the newspaper or they see it on TV, that that's true. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is considered to be information fascinates me. But what do you think, Justin? I mean, I think that authorities and law enforcement think that they have to try to kill the protests and stuff. Although I know that Sam Adams and the other officials, they basically, I don't think that they really opposed it per se, but they were sort of in this position of having to try to control it or something like that. What do you think? I mean, Sam Adams was already rolling out this measure to promote community banks, right? But talk about, you know, right. this you know, can a movement be killed? Can the city try to kill it? Who is it that tries to short circuit demonstrations in Portland?
I mean, the police obviously like to come out and play around with their little toys and try to show their power. I mean, you can see the increased militarization of the police all across this country. And it's just, anytime there's an action, they're trying to show that they have control. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to intimidate people out of protesting. They're trying to scare people into complacency.
You know what really got me was the article that I saw in the Willie Week about a specific guy who was, you know, he's an academic, and that he had lectured or worked with the FBI in the past about being culturally competent around Muslim people, was the way it looked to me. And somehow it came out that he's active with Portland Rising Tide, and he had been active with Portland Rising Tide and somebody else as well. And now he's been ostracized from those groups. And, you know, and so the Willie Week article was from October 30th, activist or FBI snitch. It was a pretty fascinating article. I think that there were some points that I would have liked to see in there. But sometimes I think that we create our own circular firing squads. I don't know. That's just me. Sometimes I think that we know what the FBI was created to do, and we project that onto ourselves, and we do it without them doing it. And, you know, Gary Webb, a CIA didn't have to pull the trigger to kill Gary Webb. I think that I don't know. We do have another caller. Shall we go to the phone line? Do we really have another caller? We have Elliot on the phone. Elliot, what do you think?
Well, you know, the Occupy movement, you know, just flared up and died down like a campfire that had a bucket of water thrown on it. David Graeber, one of the intellectual founders of Occupy, you know, he specifically designed it to have no leadership and no long-term governance structure because of his principled anarchist theories to supposedly avoid the like a Stalin. And
that was also a civil rights tactic as well.
And, you know, and going and, you know, I've been involved way back to like anti-nuclear work. You know, there would be comical signs saying "Eat the rich," which didn't, you know, make the rich fear. If I, you know, wanted to be more tough-minded about it, because maybe the Occupy movement will come back in a few years after the unemployment triples or so, whatever other bad things happen, I would have hundreds of people holding up signs that would have like a filler space in the middle. And would basically pick out people who went through the revolving door to cash in the government, like Peter Orszag from Budget to Citibank, and Lanny Brewer from Justice to Covington and Burley, the Holder's biggest corporate law firm, and hold up signs that said, "Kill Blank's kids." And there would be dozens.
Elliot, I got to cut you off because that's out of line, Elliot. We need to pull the plug on Elliot. We are not advocating anyone to be hurt or injured. We're not going to hold up signs advocating that anyone be killed. And I just got to pull the plug on that, Elliot. Shame on you. Okay. Justin Bridges,
yes.
Can you play some music for us?
Sure.
Yes, it's true. I just sort of censored someone on KBOO who said that we should hold up signs advocating that people kill somebody else's kids. How do we save this moment here? We're live in the studio with Simon Tam and Justin Bridges. Justin just came out with his newest CD today, so go.
Yeah, this song is called Mysteries. I'll be releasing a music video for this.
Find all the answers to all the mysteries of life. Likewise, we were around. Where did we come from? So many theories, which one is right? It's clear someone is wrong. All that you can do is gather knowledge and live out your own life. Yeah, yeah. See, I'm so sick and tired of all the government's lies. Don't believe the politicians. Come on, man, open your eyes. Revolution is now. See, it's our time to fight. Like our fathers before, they tried to take all our rights. But it's no longer about race, religion, concepts, and greed. It's about the 1%'s wealth, power, and greed. We ain't taking this, yes. You see, our time has come. Can't believe it's taking this long for the revolution. The time is here, the time is now. To overthrow the ones that keep holding us down. The time is here, the times will be free. So stand up for your rights, forget the powers that be. The time is here, the time is now. To overthrow the ones that just keep holding us down. The time is here, our times will be free. So stand up for your rights, forget the powers that be. Verge of revolt, we almost went off in 07. Took it with a new shade of puppet like he was sent down from heaven. And the masses sat back, took what he said for the truth. Now Bilderberg counts cash while they're laughing at you. So tell me, when do you stand together or alone? Shall you stand and leave? I'm gonna kick you out of your home. So will you stand up for truth, your beliefs, and your rights? Together as one people, it's our time to unite. The time is here, the time is now. To overthrow the ones that keep holding us down. The time is here, the times will be free. So stand up for your rights, forget the powers that be.
The time is here, the time is now. To overthrow the ones that just keep holding us down. The time is here, the time to be free. So stand up for your rights, forget the powers that be. Hey. Why we must follow society's plan for a normal life. I cannot understand, nor will I give in. My true self, I must
Justin James Bridges, his new CD, he just released it today. The CD is On My Way, and that song was called?
That song is called Mysteries.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Justin James Bridges. We do have a copy of the CD, but we agree that it's too complicated to do a giveaway on the spur of the moment. But Right. You need to keep listening to KBOO because we're going to figure out a way to get Justin James Bridges' CDs in your hand. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Today, music and politics. We're joined by Occupy Troubadour, Justin Bridges, and Simon Tam of The Slants. We're talking about what are the limits of the political system, you know, using art to make change. We have a caller. We have Eric on the phone. Eric, what do you think?
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Thank you for your show. It's really good. In Occupy, I was up in Tacoma at the time, and I was on one of the first marches in Occupy Tacoma. And it was a lot more tame up there, but it's the same thing. Just the whole mood of the establishment just put down that whole movement.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. Do we have another caller? We have Merlin on the phone as well. Merlin, what's going on with you?
Oh, I'm all right. Good morning to you.
Hey. Hi, you're on the air. What's going on, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. How about you?
We're doing great. We've established that we're doing great.
Outstanding. Hello, Simon.
Hey, Merlin.
Hey.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear from you as well. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Merlin.
What's on your mind today, Merlin?
Oh, just, digging the fight that they're doing with the trademark case. The Slants are doing amazing work out there, and they fully deserve to be able to trademark their name to avoid fraudulent situations.
Merlin, let me ask you, is there a kind of music that really motivates you politically?
Political motivation. Well, yeah. I do tend to like, I like heavy punk, like all sorts of things like that, where, it takes a deeper look into the society at large. Sometimes, a bit radically, of course, but I think it's that heavy introspective that they give that allows a person to draw their own lines or whatever. They don't necessarily have to go super crazy, but takes a deeper look.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, have a good one.
You too. Simon, since Merlin was a fan of yours, okay, I bet he really likes Justin Bridges too. Talk a little bit. So a year ago, you put out your most recent album, The Yellow Album, and that album was really celebrated. Talk a little bit about what's in that album. We just got to hear this awesome piece from Justin Bridges, his newest CD that was just released today. And we're in touch with his political folk vibes, okay? He had a little reggae mixed in there. It was kind of cool. But can you talk a little bit about some of the specific cuts that you have and some of the specific issues? Like, talk about specific songs that you have that really resonate with people.
Sure. We actually have this one song, and we're actually releasing a music video for it in the next couple of weeks, but it's called Adopted, and it's about our singer's experiences of being one of the rescue babies from Saigon during the Vietnam War, and how it what it was like for him to grow up here in America with a white family as a as an adoptee. And we actually recently did an interview with Gazillion Voices, which is a new magazine for adoptees. And so that's something that's been resonating with a lot of our fans because of how many people have been adopted in this country, who've been through the foster system or something like that. But I think also on a deeper level, how people sometimes feel lost. They don't feel like they have someone that they can connect with. And so that's something that's been a very personal experience that our singer's never really publicly talked about or wrote about, but he decided to put it to music. And so that's been really powerful. And then we just have kind of, I mean, we like to write about our personal experiences, like being in and out of love, being on tour and that sort of thing. Our singer also went through kind of a devastating relationship right around the time as we were writing these songs. And so we have another song called Sour Love, which is about that. When something that you think it's your fairy tale relationship, when it falls apart, what happens and how do you move on? Several of us have lost loved ones throughout these last few years as well. And so it just kind of, there's a lot of, I guess, searching and exploration for meaning within our own lives and what it's like.
That issue of international adoption abuse is completely fascinating, and I don't think most people are really aware of all the issues within that. And I was just looking at an Associated Press article about 3 weeks ago, and something like 17 Russian adopted children have been killed in the United States in the past several years. I was shocked by the numbers, and that's from Russia. Russia will no longer allow anyone from the United States to adopt a child. Years ago, I had these two women on the air that created a website called Transracial Abductees. They were talking about, they were raised in the suburbs of Oregon by Christian families that literally picked them out of a catalog because it was part of their religious belief that they had to evangelize, quote, savage children, unquote, from other countries. It's deep. That stuff is deep. And we saw the Ethiopian sister who was abused to death in Washington State last year or the year before. Those issues are deep, and they're very emotional as well. And it looks like we've got a full slate of callers. I do have to say, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, host Michelle Schroeder Fletcher interviews professor and author Patrick Brantlinger about his book States of Emergency, Essays on Culture and Politics. At 9:30, we'll hear about the history of the Philippines with Luisa Francia, author of The History of the Philippines. They say that that hurricane was 300 miles wide. Anyway, at 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a new experimental theater piece based on the 1955 murder of Emmett Till. And an interview with author Warren Lehrer about his new novel, A Life in Books, The Rise and Fall of Blue Mobley. At 11 on The Dirtbag, we're looking at when and how to harvest persimmons and parsnips and what to do with all those leaves. Persimmons, persimmons, persimmons. That should be the word of the day. I love persimmons. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Justin Bridges and Simon Tam. We've got a full slate of callers. Let's go to the phone line. We've got Edie on the phone. Edie, what's going on with you today?
I am just so overcome with gratitude for you, Lisa, and you, Justin, and KBOO, and other callers, and the joy of how KBOO connects us with our soul, our body, with each other, with the global, the local, and the individual, I just am so grateful for that. And one of the things I'm grateful for is that because of volunteering to help Franklin High School's Food and Learning Gardens, I had learned to always be in the right place at the right time with a sense of trust and harmonious flow, so I could be right there when Justin Bridges was getting beat up and it looked like he was dying. And I could be praying so powerfully that I felt honored to be in the right place at the right time. And when it comes to the folk songs, the songs that have empowered my life are simple melodies that have lyrics that are sung with integrity and authenticity about our real human story that transcends, you know, society, politics, you know, whether you're red or blue or whatever, and gets to our core connectedness, and then that helps bridge, so we're not just singing to the choir, but helping to change lives across music venues, across human experiences, because we all have the same needs, the same feelings, and I just want to thank all of you for how it's helping me see some connections with some elderly handicapped people that I'm helping, who may have different politics, but have this similar idea that we're in this together, and let's practice the golden rule, and let's use these horrific or whatever experiences, but overcome them with the good that we can express. You know, if they're being greedy and selfish and contemptuous, we can be respectful and kind and generous.
So. All right, Edie. Well, thank you a lot for calling. And let's go back to the phone line.
Alexandria,
what's up with you today? Alexandria, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
What's going on?
I'm just driving home from an overnight shift, and I enjoy listening to you guys in the morning. It's really hopeful for me, and I was just reminiscing about thinking about music and action and enjoying the music that's being played. I'm a musician myself, and I'm really interested in how, you know, there's a lot of different activist music. Folk music has always been a very strong activism music, but I'm thought about different facets of how we can make changes in the world, and how we really need to start influencing the system ourselves and using different forms of music, such as classical and all of the, to reach different parts of our culture that are maybe like an older generation of people. And so just thank you for the show, and I'm just it always gives me a lot to think about after work.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling, Alexandria.
Yeah, sure.
We have another caller. We have Harry on the phone. Harry, what are you thinking about today?
Greetings, everyone. Yeah, the question I have for Justin is, why did he settle instead of going to trial?
It was all
Thanks
sorts
for calling,
of,
Harry.
Yeah, there was all sorts of things that I was just dealing with. It's been an emotional nightmare, actually, since I've been attacked. I've been harassed and tormented by all sorts of people from, I mean, there's just, I could go on and go on for hours and hours about it, but it just got to the point where it was like, it was so much negative that I needed it out of my life.
You know, it's interesting, that question, too, because I'm looking at Simon. When you have something going on, and here we're talking about the limits of the political system. I see the courts as part of the political system. Quite a lot of law is decided. A lot of law is decided in the courts. You know, more coffee doesn't always help. But I'm saying it's amazing how law is created that we didn't agree with, and it boils down to one dude in a suit in D.C. or wherever he is at. But the other thing that's part of that is when you decide you're going to get the attorney, one of the things that's fascinating about music and politics is that you need more than politics. You need something that soothes your soul, because your personality, yourself, is hanging out there.
Exactly.
And that's what is so remarkable about the role that music can play. Because, you know, here's Simon talking about, well, we've got some love songs and we've got some bad love songs. You know, you need that part. And I kind of think a judge or an attorney can't give you that. So that's fascinating, too. Occupy was like that. What were you going to say, Simon?
Oh, well, I was going to say, and I think Justin could definitely relate to this, is that we're musicians, we're artists. We don't want to sit here and hang out in court and
exactly.
You know, fill out paperwork. I mean, I've been fighting this trademark case for over 4 years. It's likely, since we're appealing to a federal court and possibly the Supreme Court, I might have another 2, 4, 5 years ahead of me. And I mean, it's actually very possible, knowing how bands are, that I'd still be fighting for this trademark after this band's disbanded. We don't know what's going to happen there, but first and foremost, we like to create art, and that's about expressing ourselves and our struggles and our experiences, whether it's against a system, whether it's against ourselves. But that's what we're here to do. I mean, as musicians, you feel like you're put on earth to create music, not to fight a legal system. And so I can definitely understand there have been many times where I wanted to just give up and say, you know, forget this whole thing. We'll just continue on even without the trademark. And it was really our first attorney that we worked with. He said, you know, this is so important because ultimately, if you can win this case, you'll help win this right for other minorities who are coming up against it. I mean, this law has been unfairly targeting minorities for 70 years now. It's 2013. Why are we using laws from the 40s to dictate about race today? It's just absurd.
And I just want to say, when we're talking about minorities in the United States, we're actually talking about the new majority. Let's go back to the phone lines real quick. We got a few more callers, eh?
Chris.
Chris on the phone. Chris, what's going on with you today?
Good morning. I'm just happened to hop in the car from one place to another and heard this conversation and just thought I'd throw my 2 cents in.
You know a little bit about music and politics, don't you, Chris?
Yeah, it's a hobby that I find less and less time for, but yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think that, you know, I was thinking the larger picture of art and resistance, it's like, you know, where would we be in terms of our ability to critique the larger society without artists like Banksy doing what he does, you know, and in the places that he does them, that just completely, with a simple image, just undermine a whole edifice of lies and politicking.
He just did a really weird, trippy thing in New York, too. He just wrapped up a residency that was hilarious, but keep going.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And so, you know, it's like we absolutely need art as part of the movement. And I was listening to KBOO the other day, and there's this woman who I think she donated her record label to the Smithsonian, and it's all this folk music from Central and South America. And she said something that really stuck out to me, and that was that, you know, can you really call it a revolution if you don't have music? If there's not music coming from the masses of the people, then is it really a genuine people's movement? And, you know, that's something that's kind of resonated with me since I heard her say that, and just thinking about how we need it in order to, you know, keep the joy in the serious work of trying to push for change and trying to find common language to express, you know, the things that we feel but are hard to articulate. And, you know, without music, especially for me, like hip hop music has embodied that for me from day one. And at first it was so unself-conscious about it. It was just doing, you know, the people were just participating in it because they had nothing better to do, and ended up creating something, you know, beautiful and lasting and, you know, priceless for a whole generation of people. And, you know, the fundamentals of hip hop is a form of resistance against apathy, resistance to poverty, resistance to invisibility. And despite all of the things that we're trying to, you know, destroy the city and the borough that hip hop came from, this incredibly beautiful thing came out of it. And you know, I think that's an incredible metaphor, and concurrent with punk, you know, and punk was doing a lot of the same things that hip hop was doing. And if you look at the folks who are involved, you can see, like, in the way that they dress and in their style, like, there's so much in common that now today we don't even equate the two, but really they were both these organic forms of resistance that came from the lower classes.
Awesome, so, Chris. I got to grab it. Call earlier next time. I love it when you call.
I will.
Never hesitate.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling, Chris. We gotta wrap this show up. Justin Bridges is on a national tour. He's doing a hemp education thing. You know, we are in Oregon hammering out our new hemp law. I'm
exactly.
Like, am I drunk? What did we do? Talk about it a little bit. We got like 1 minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I'm going on the Cannabis and Hemp Advocacy Tour. It's a national tour. Starts January 24th in San Francisco. We're going south through California, then east through Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, up through Oklahoma, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, back through California, up through Oregon, and ending in Seattle for the first half of the tour. It's going to be a 4-month tour. We're doing 20 major cities, looking like maybe around 90 to 100 total shows.
Tell me, what is your website? Where are people going to learn more about it?
JustinJamesBridges.com.
Okay. And I think that we're at a show right now. I think we need to leave it there. Find out more at theslants.com. Go there. They've got music. You're going to love their music videos that are coming out. Also, find out more at JustinJamesBridges.com. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. Sky, woof, woof. The show will be podcast. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on the show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Hi, I'm Joanne Hardesty. Join me on November 14th for a stimulating conversation on Voices from the Edge. I will be interviewing John Nichols and Robert McChesney, co-authors of Dollarocracy, a new book on how the money and media election complex is destroying America. Join us from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. on November 14th on Voices from the Edge.
KABU Community Radio is proud to join the Native American Appreciation Club and Mecha Club in co-sponsoring the First University of Portland Powwow, Saturday, November 16th at 1 p.m. Everyone is welcome to come celebrate and honor Native American Heritage Month. There will be traditional Native and Aztec dancers, singers, drummers, vendors, and more. That's the First University of Portland Powwow to take place at the Child Center, 5000 Willamette Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of KBOO.FM under Community Events.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. It's 9:01, and coming right up, Political Perspectives. First up, we'll have Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher. She interviews professor and author Patrick Bratlinger about his book, States of Emergency, Essays on Culture and Politics. At 9:30, we'll hear about the history of the Philippines with Luis Francia, author of History of the Philippines. And at 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a new experimental theater piece based on the 1955 murder of 14-year-old Emmett Till. And an interview with author Warren Lehrer about his novel, A Life in Books, his new novel, A Life in Books, The Rise and Fall of Blue Mobley. And at 11 o'clock, The Dirtbag looks at when and how to harvest persimmon and parsnips and what to do with all those leaves. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. You allow KABU to thrive, and we appreciate you very much. Stay tuned now for Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher and her guest, Patrick Bratlinger.